This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
Now, we had a chat last week with Ben Freeman from Freshford Nursery about tree recommendations, and this week we're looking at a lower level in your garden, or that medium level, which is your shrubs, and small shrubs up to a metre, medium shrubs 1 to 2 metres, and large shrubs over 2 metres. We're going to get some recommendations in just a moment from Alex Klobis in State Flora, and I know that you'll throw your views in as well, Sophie, so have a listen to that. Get your pen and paper out, get ready to make your list, and I will try and ensure that the list is printed in the ABC Radio Adelaide newsletter. So if you haven't signed up for it, please just type those words into your search engine and make sure that you get that, and you will get this list delivered to you over the coming weeks. But before we do that, Sophie, just to let people know that we are taking questions on native shrubs. If you would like to ask something of Alex and Sophie, 1300 222 891. If you'd like to make some comments on the text line, 0467 922 891, and I'll give away a couple of ABC gardening magazines later in the program. Let's introduce Alex Klobis from State Flora. Alex, thanks for joining us on Talk Back Gardening.
Hello, happy to be here.
Fantastic. Now I'm going to hand over to you, Sophie.
Absolutely. So we're interested in talking to you about your selections for the best native shrubs, and we've divided them into small, medium and large, and that people can add to their gardens around Adelaide. Now, these aren't just local native plants. We're going to expand the criteria, but obviously people are looking for native plants because they're suited to our climate and they bring in the birds, bees and butterflies. But when you say a small shrub, what constitutes a small shrub? Is that under a metre?
In general, yeah. I mean, that terminology is somewhat ambiguous, but yeah, less than a metre in general.
Okay, so we'll have small shrubs that are less than a metre. We're going to talk about medium shrubs. So what would that be, say, between 1 and 2?
Yeah, around abouts, yep.
Okay, and then large shrubs are obviously bigger than 2 metres. Okay, so, you know, you stock hundreds of varieties of shrubs, small shrubs.
We do. Yeah.
So how did you go about choosing your top five?
It wasn't easy, to be honest. Like, the list could have been, you know, dozens long for each variety. I tried to just choose a smattering of a few local things, some things that are drought tolerant, and then things that will sort of grow under canopy to fill that niche under trees.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's start. Now, the first one on your list is an Oleria, which if people don't know, they've got beautiful little daisy flowers and they're beloved by beneficial insects. So tell us about this one.
We chose Oleria homolepis, which is an endemic species to WA, usually peaking at about a metre in height. So it's just a very prolific flowerer when it does flower. Like, it's particularly eye-catching with sort of mauve flowers covering the entire plant.
And that would be spring flowering or spring heading into summer?
So winter to spring.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, so that's a fabulous one. And we might just touch on pruning with all of these right at the end as a group. The next one you've got down is one of my favourites. It's one of the type of saltbush, Rigodia spinescens. Mm-hmm. And the thing I love about this is it's low. So whereas some people mightn't have space for an old man saltbush, you know, this is one that they can fit into their garden in a smaller space. It can be pruned to be something quite formal or something quite modern and contemporary. Mm-hmm. You can even do sort of waveforms with its pruning, and it's really tough. So tell us about Rigodia spinescens.
Well, that's exactly right. It's low growing. I've seen it even hedged at sort of knee height, and it can make like an extremely formal bush. Left to its own devices, it can spread sort of 2 to 3 metres and it will stay generally about knee to waist high. Very sort of striking grey-green foliage, works excellent in coastal gardens and rockeries. And then I guess one of its biggest selling points would be that it's very drought tolerant when established.
Absolutely.
And it will grow quite well under like a dappled sort of canopy of gum or a larger tree.
And I often remind people that the best plant to have near your orchard, near your veggie patch, to bring in beneficial insects is any type of saltbush. And this is perfect for that because they bring in all sorts of parasitoids which help you manage pest insects in your productive patches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so an Eremophila, which one have you gone for?
So I picked a local one, Glabra, subspecies Glabra, or tarbush as it's known. Which is just widespread through most of SA. I think for me, the reason Eremophila is a standout is its bird attracting qualities, where just anecdotally in the nursery, when dozens of species are flowering, the Eremophila rose seems to be the one that most attracts honey eating birds. It's like a sort of low growing, spreading bush, can be pruned back after flowering to make something more formal or just sort of left to get a bit shaggy. But like certainly putting this in your garden is a big win in terms of bird attracting.
Wonderful. And then you've also chosen a coria. Now corias, there are so many different corias and they're all beautiful. And again, bird attracting. But which one have you gone for?
So I chose spreading coria or coria decumbens. So you're looking at sort of 30 to 50 centimetres in height, but a spread up to 3 metres. So I think coria is a real standout. Again, if you have a shady aspect somewhere in the garden that you want to bush out, corias are quite tolerant of like reasonably heavy shade. But then also if they're catching sun throughout the day, it doesn't really bother them. So they're quite variable in that sense.
And they're brilliant. You know, if you've got gum trees where you're having a problem getting other things established, corias will thrive.
Exactly, yep.
Okay, and the last one for our small shrubs, what have you gone for?
So I chose a Senecio species native to the Flinders Ranges called Megaglossus or Superb Groundsel. It's a very attractive plant with a sort of grey-green foliage again, big broad leaves and like a really showy yellow flower. It's extremely butterfly attracting. Lots of insects have interplay with this plant. It's a plant that's approaching vulnerable status in certain areas. It's been heavily grazed over the years. So I just think it's a really special plant to have in your garden, and you'll certainly see the insect life respond to it.
Oh, wonderful. And you know, helping to save a plant that's vulnerable. That's fabulous. Okay, so we've got our five small shrubs. Now we're talking medium shrubs. So you know, we'll classify that as somewhere between 1 and 2 metres high. Mm-hmm. What are your favourites?
So I've chosen Grevillea levanguliaceae, which is basically it's the only Grevillea that's native throughout most of the Mount Lofty ranges. So again, it's important if you're trying to establish plants that are locally native to our area. I mean, this one probably could have slotted into small or medium. It can sort of vary a little bit in height, but it's extremely attractive. Flowers profusely in late spring or late winter to spring with sort of like a dark pink creamy flower. And being a Grevillea, it just has that really unusual flower shape.
Absolutely. And, you know, beloved by birds, so that's fantastic. Now you've gone for a Westringia too, which is a little, perhaps not the most well-known Westringia, but really interesting.
Yeah, well, the reason I chose this one is because it's native to dryland areas of SA, so particularly for listeners who might be further north or out into sort of mallee areas, this is a Westringia that's just that little bit more drought tolerant and hardy. Again, it's extremely important for wildlife, bird, bee and butterfly attracting. And I guess the beauty of Westringia is if you're trying to get a formal look into your garden, they're extremely receptive to pruning. They can be toperied even or shaped or hedged or left to its own devices. It'll just be a relatively compact, neat little shrub.
Wonderful. And now you've gone for one of my favourites, the sticky hop bush, which is widespread throughout South Australia. You know, you'll be driving back from the country and you'll see them with their amazing display on the side of the road. So tell us about that.
Again, like the flowering is somewhat insignificant, but it actually ends up getting a sort of a winged seed pod on it, like this bright red seed pod, which is extremely eye-catching. I think I like it so much because it's quite a glossy sort of deep green for a local native. Mm-hmm. And it feels like an important niche in a garden in the sense that it can take full open sun positions, but if you have, again, a shady aspect with dappled light, it will grow quite thick and bushy in a position like that. And again, like very receptive to pruning.
Mm. And then the next one has beautiful flowers and an amazing scent, Prostranthera, the native oregano.
Yes, so very aromatic foliage. I feel like this is a plant where if you grow it well, pretty much everyone that visits your house is going to be saying, "What's that plant?" Because when it flowers, it's extremely prolific. The entire bush will just turn like a sort of showy purple. Again, it's an important wildlife plant. You'll get plenty of interplay with insects and birds. The leaves are edible, if that's something you're into. Can be used for screening, informal hedging. So, yeah, just an all-round winner.
Okay. And now the last medium shrub, I love orange. So these orange pea-like flowers are really mm-hmm. specky, and it's called a bush pea. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, so Poltonea larger florens, which again occurs naturally through Mount Lofty ranges. I think it's a plant that when it does flower in nature, everyone sort of notices it. You suddenly start to realize that they're quite widespread. Mm. Yeah, extremely showy, sort of orangey bronze pea flowers. In a garden setting, it doesn't have to be left to grow wispy. You can prune it back and end up with something quite dense. And again, like it is actually a host plant for specific butterflies, particularly the fringed blue butterfly, for which it's like an extremely important feed plant for the larvae. So, yeah, great plant to have in your garden.
Wonderful. Fantastic. So we've had five medium shrubs, five small, and we're going to finish with our five large shrubs. And mm-hmm. the first one on that list, I'm a bit of a saltbush queen. I love saltbush. I've got lots of different types. I mean, I live out near the desert. So so I'm using the Old Man Saltbush, or a particular cultivar of it, as a windbreak. It's amazing.
It is. It's an extremely useful plant, particularly for drier regions. With a maximum height sort of 2 to 3 meters, I have seen it hedged, definitely good for windbreaks and screening. The foliage is just quite striking, with sort of a silvery blue hue to it. I think one of the obvious winning points with this plant is that even through that last drought that we sort of had, this is the sort of plant that just won't bat an eyelid. If it's established, dryness isn't going to bother it. Tolerant of almost any soil type that you could throw at it.
Yeah.
It will also be useful as a fodder plant, which is something that it's been utilised for.
I'm just going to jump in there. We're getting loads and loads of texts saying, can you spell these? Where's the list? So I'm just going to reiterate, we are going to, just as we are going to with Ben Freeman's list of trees last week, publish it in our ABC newsletter, and then that will come to you every 2 weeks and we'll have the full list. There is no way we can go through and spell every single thing that we've already heard from Alex Klobis from State Flora this morning. But we will come back and hear the rest of his large shrub recommendations in a moment. So make sure you subscribe now. Colette of Clearview says, shredding my dried native oregano as I listen. Dave says, all types of Eremophila, and a nice big one is Eremophila longifolia, long flowering and great food for wildlife. And he sent a beautiful photo through of it. Dave, thanks very much for that. We'll come back in a moment. If you've got a shrub question, we may be able to sneak it in on 1300 222 891, and the text line is 0467 922 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And our special guest is Alex Klobis from State Flora, giving us his small, medium and large recommendations for garden shrubs. I interrupted you there, Sophie and Alex. You've just got to the first one, which was the Old Man Saltbush. And I'll let you get back into your conversation.
And if people do want to, you know, get this list sooner and they listen back to this conversation, which they can do, we have given common names throughout. So while they mightn't have been able to get the botanical name down, you will be able to get the common name. And
exactly.
Then, you know, if you visit State Flora or your local native nursery, they'll be able to help you with that. And just one more thing about the old man saltbush. As I mentioned before, any type of saltbush harbours the highest number of beneficial bugs of any native plant, and definitely worth having around your productive areas, because growers on the Northern Adelaide Plains basically planted saltbush around their market gardens and could reduce the need to use insecticides significantly. Wow. So definitely worth doing.
Lots of good reasons to plant it.
Absolutely. Now, the second shrub on your list is the beautiful silver banksia.
Yes. So Banksia marginata, silver banksia, which again occurs naturally throughout South Australia. You'll see them through Mount Lofty conservation parks. Probably a favourite of mine, where a lot of the things we've been discussing can be pruned into a formal shape and have quite neat sort of growth habit. The banksia deviates from that and can have sort of a real gnarled, unusual growth habit, which I think can be quite striking. I've often likened them to a giant bonsai, just the way they grow in the ground with a really chunky trunk. But yeah, for me, it's just an extremely eye-catching local native, and then again, extremely important plant for birds, insects, bees, and those sorts of things.
Absolutely. And the next one is Berseria, or Christmas bush. Now, I'm fascinated by, as you drive around the state, in drier areas, this is finished flowering. But in cooler areas, like the Mount Lofty Ranges, it's still flowering. And it's beloved, you know, white fluffy flowers. It varies a bit in size, so you can see them, you know, medium shrubbish, or you can see them almost as trees. But insects just love it. If you want to find native bees, you'll find them on this plant. If you want to find butterflies, you'll find them on this plant. So, you know, Berseria is a really wide spread plant that's really hardy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so Christmas bush, it often gets termed because the flowering often coincides with Christmas. But yeah, extremely variable. It would adapt to the climate that it's in. The foliage is quite like a dark, striking green. I mean, yesterday I was looking out into our garden here at State Flora and saw a kangaroo pulling a branch down from one of them and nibbling away at it. So they're certainly wildlife attracting. And again, it's like with the Poulterneia, when they have their flowering window, suddenly you notice that they're everywhere and they're extremely eye-catching. We will get inundated with people with photos saying, what's this plant? Because, yeah, the flower's quite wispy and just very attractive.
Absolutely. Actually, I was at the TreeNet conference last year, and one of the plants they said we should investigate more as a tree, as a small tree, was Berseria. And they had some beautiful photos where they had been trained to form a tree rather than a shrub, and they were really striking. Now, a grevillea, you can't have this list of favourite large shrubs without a grevillea, and this grevillea olivaceae, which means olive leaf, is one of my favourites.
Yeah, me as well. And I think part of the reason that I like it so much is its adaptability. So if you're coming into the nursery and saying, hey, what's the toughest grevillea you've got? This is one of the ones I would be pointing you towards. It will tolerate all soil types, including limestone. Mm-hmm. It has a really dense growth habit, can be pruned to shape, can be used as a hedge or a screen, works in coastal conditions, inland, hills. It's just extremely adaptable. In terms of bird life, a lot of its flowering is internal on inner growth, which is a win for small nectar-eating birds because they're able to feed but also feel safe. So, again, it's a plant that will bring huge amounts of wildlife into your garden whilst also being extremely attractive.
So, and it can have red or yellow or orange flowers depending on which one you get. And if someone wants an alternative, a hardy alternative to a Pittosporum hedge, right, this is the plant to go for. From a distance, it looks exactly the same, but it's not so prima donna-ish. You know, it'll take heat, it'll take dry, and it will last. So, and then for our final plant, the last tall shrub, you've put in a Callistemon or bottle brush.
Yeah, so I chose Callistemon sieberi. Obviously, Callistemon, there's ample cultivars. There's lots of different types out there with different flowers, different colours, different form. The sieberi or river bottle brush is one that's native to South Australia and considered quite rare. I think it gets overlooked in the sea of cultivars a little bit, but at a height of 2 to 4 metres and a slightly weeping habit, it will flower cream or light pink through late spring and summer. I feel that if it's well-maintained, perhaps slightly under-pruned, it can make an extremely attractive feature shrub or small tree in a garden setting. And obviously, being a Callistemon, you will definitely be getting bees and birds and things like that attracted to it.
Brilliant. Now, all of these plants we've talked about, you could put them in and let them go and let them do their thing, or you could manage them with pruning, couldn't you?
Absolutely. I think pretty much every single plant that we've talked about today would benefit from pruning. General rule of thumb, after flowering has finished is a good time to cut back. Obviously not into an extremely hot day, you know, pick your day. The exception for me would be Banksia marginata. I like that gnarly growth habit that they have, so I would let that do its thing. But pretty much everything else we have on that list, you could make it into an extremely formal, tightly pruned plant, or you could just let it sort of do its own thing.
Paul from Wyala has just sent through a wonderful photograph of a native hedge around his house. I'm not sure which one it is, Paul. Let us know what that is, but looks fantastic.
Brilliant. Well, so one of the things is, Alex, you're from State Flora Nursery. Now, you've got one in Belair National Park and, of course, one in Murray Bridge. And, you know, wherever you live, you can either visit, you know, a native plant nursery or a local native plant nursery and just be inspired by all the options open to you. And, you know, the thing is, if you go to a local native nursery, they're going to have the expert advice. They're not going to sell you on a native plant that comes from the rainforests of northern New South Wales and Queensland.
Exactly. And Andrew at Flagstaff Hill says, where is State Flora, Alex?
So the Belair site is actually in the national park up at Belair. So you can just let the people at the gatehouse know that you're heading through into the nursery. And then we have our production nursery where we do a lot of our growing is out at Murray Bridge. And then there's a retail shop connected to that, which is just off Bremer Road, off the main strip there through Murray Bridge.
And all of the plants that you've recommended are for sale at State Flora. So that would be Absolutely. A really great place to start.
Definitely.
Fantastic. Alex, thank you so much for putting so much thought and effort into coming up with that list for us. We really appreciate you joining us on Talkback Gardening. We'll get you back one day.
No worries. It was great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Alex Klobus from State Flora.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
Now, we have got lines free for you to speak straight to Sophie and get advice on any question that you have on 1300 222 891. I've got a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away as well. Just coming back to the conversation that we've been having with Alex Klobus from State Flora, who gave us his recommendations for small shrubs, that's up to 1 metre, medium shrubs, that's 1 to 2 metres, and large shrubs, over 2 metres. We've got lots of text traffic on this, Sophie. Graham on a hill somewhere says, best segment I've ever heard on Saturday Talkback Gardening. This texter says, kangaroos prune my Banksia marginata. They are tough as and come back more compact. Mary has sent through a beautiful photograph of her old man saltbush hedge at Strathalbyn, and it's a big one, like a long one. Says very tough and only gets watered when it rains. Thanks, Mary. If State Flora is too far away to drive to, you can download their catalogue. Just phone them and order and get the plants delivered. Thank you to that very helpful text. Another person asks, why aren't councils conferring with Alex Klobus from State Flora? Very good question.
Can I butt in, Deb, at that point? We were talking about Australian natives, most of which are part of South Australia's floral profile. But when councils, say, are doing verge programs, councils only use generally what's locally native in your area. Okay, so councils, if they're doing a verge planting program like many councils do, they'll be using local Indigenous plants that are local to your specific area.
Okay, thanks, Soph. Chris from the Murrayland says, State Flora Murray Bridge is my happy place. That's lovely. Mine's right here in the studio. And in the garden, of course, Sophie, how can we access the newsletter? That is the question that most people are asking. Now, everyone's saying, is this the same as Sophie's newsletter? No. Is it the same as John Lamb's newsletter? No. It is the ABC 891 Radio Adelaide newsletter. But what we are doing, because these lists are so extensive and they've got all of the information as to why they're in the list, we are printing them in the newsletter. It will arrive to you through your email address. If you would like to sign up to get it every fortnight and you'll hear other stuff about ABC Radio Adelaide, simply type in ABC Radio Adelaide newsletter into your search engine. It will bring up the way to subscribe to stay in touch. It's very simple and you should be able to get this when it comes out. And I'm not sure if Ben Freeman's tree recommendations are already out. It might be one that comes out in one fortnight and one thereafter. But of course, you can listen back to this program after 11. I don't know. I think it gets uploaded round about by midday. If you would like to listen back to Talk Back Gardening straight away, you can do that by going to abc.net.au/Adelaide and listen back to the program. You can listen through the ABC Listen, which is an app you can have on your phone, or you can wait for the podcast, which should go up on Monday, and have a listen back there. Okay, all of that has been said and done. Let's get into your questions. Call now on 1300 222 891. Andrew's in Surrey Downs. Good morning, Andrew.
Oh, good morning. Hey, I'm just purging my coffee machine. I've got to turn it off. Question, yeah, I asked about the newsletters originally. Could you get the back issues? The other question I need to know, is there any time, I don't get to hear the whole show, so I download the podcast and listen to them when available. Have you guys talked much yet about what's going to happen with the impact of the varroa mite? Because that is going to affect everything, particularly where our veggie gardens and stuff like that.
Can I just say, what we were just talking about with those native shrubs, actually, is one of the solutions, because what we need to do is encourage more native pollinators. I mean, there are 2,000 species of native bees across Australia, more than probably. There's 300 odd around Adelaide. And those native pollinators that we've never really cared for, we've never really supported, are the solution. So we know blue-banded bees are brilliant for tomatoes. You will have bigger, tastier tomatoes if you've got blue-banded bees. So what we need to do is we need to get more of the native pollinators in, because where you'll notice the difference with varroa mite is that the feral bee colonies, you know, the honey bees that were living in the old gum tree, they are most vulnerable to varroa mite. Managed hives will be fine, but those feral bee colonies will struggle. And so the effect of those bees on your pollination, no one's really known. We've never known how many feral colonies there are. We've never really paid attention to them. So the best thing you can do is simply to encourage the local pollinators and your veggie patch will be fine.
Okay, we need to know more info about that at some point. Is it Italy available?
On varroa mites?
No, on getting the
on
local
native pollinators.
Bees, yeah.
Yeah, so basically it's about planting local native plants to your area, and they will bring in the native bees. We can certainly get someone like, Katja Hogendorn in to have a chat to us about native bees and remind us again why they're so important. But, you know, rather than panic, you know, I would just say, okay, I need to start working out how I can get, you know, plants that bring in local native bees into my garden, and then that will cover everything.
Mm. And, I mean, it's something that you talk about every single week, I think, on Talk Back Gardening, Sophie. So, Andrew, definitely plant those natives, and that's a really good part of the answer to getting those beautiful pollinators into your garden.
And can I just say, I mentioned several times about saltbush, right, bringing in the highest number of beneficial bugs of any native plant. Now, if you Google, I find that it's easier to have the title of the Gardening Australia segment. If you Google Gardening Australia plus Sophie Thompson plus a simple solution. Now, this was filmed back in 2012, which is a long time ago, and it was simply about how growers on the Northern Adelaide Plains were putting saltbush around their market gardens and around their hydroponic setups, and how they could reduce the need to use insecticides by 95%. So saltbush are absolutely amazing. Google it. I mean, it's basically one of the things that I'm doing in my orchard is putting heaps of different types of saltbush in, and already I'm seeing all the ladybirds, all the parasitoids are there.
On the text line, Colsey says, I'm saltbush mad. I would plant it everywhere. I put 20 acres on the farm years ago.
Fantastic. Well, you know, it's this plant that we – sometimes you look at it and you go, oh, it looks a bit daggy, right? But it prunes – in a garden setting, it prunes beautifully.
That's wonderful. And Lola from Somerton Park is saying, you saying saltbush is good for productive areas, but does it assist in terms of citrus? Does it help combat the bad bugs on citrus plants?
Okay, well, so what it does is it brings in a range of beneficial bugs, including parasitoids. Now, parasitoids are parasitic wasps that affect, you know, that help manage bad bugs. Now, I don't specifically know that it helps citrus, but I'm sure it does, because nature is all about balance. And, you know, whether it's – I don't know that it helps with a citrus gall wasp yet, but I do know that because citrus gall wasp is actually part of, you know, the natural it's an Australian native pest, we're looking at what in nature keeps it under control. So there are, and when we say saltbush, you know, if you've got a small garden, you don't have to have the big old man saltbush. There are so many different sorts of ground covers. Alex was talking about Rhagodia spinescens. That's sort of a small shrub. There's also a ground cover called semi-baccata that's completely flat. So there are lots of different types to suit every garden.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much. Just on the newsletter, I'm getting some people saying, look, I'm typing that in and it's not leading to the newsletter. So you need to go. I'll walk you through this to the ABC Radio Adelaide website. Now that is abc.net.au/Adelaide, or just say ABC Radio Adelaide website into your search engine. You'll see it's got the latest news. It's got what's playing. If you scroll down, what's playing on the radio right now, you'll see it's us, Weekends with Deb Tribe. And at the bottom it says, get the ABC Adelaide newsletter. And just type in your email address and those lists will be printed in there. I will talk to Beck, our guru, and make sure that they are. So that's the way to do it, please. Go to the website abc.net.au/Adelaide, or just put ABC Radio Adelaide website. Scroll to the bottom and it says get the ABC Adelaide newsletter. Okay, so we've double-checked it. That is the way to do it. And sorry if you've been led down a dead end prior to now. Right, Zita is in West Lakes. Hello, Zita. Now, you've got a question about preparing trees in pots for autumn. Welcome.
Yes, I've got a saltbush in my garden and it's growing very well and doing a good job.
Well done.
I'm looking after a neighbour's garden who's very unwell at the moment. She's got lots of trees in 60-centimetre pots. She's got citrus, passion fruit, pomegranates, fajowas and other trees I don't know. I just want to set them up for her for autumn, they do not have any mulch around them either. So can you advise me of what generally to put in all the pots to get them going or get them, you know, staying them over winter and mulch as well, please.
Okay. So I would get hold of a container, a tub of organic-based fertiliser suitable for fruiting plants, right? Yeah. And then I would be sprinkling that on top of the pot. It will tell you how much to use. And then I would be getting a woody-based mulch, not a straw-based mulch, so not sugarcane, not pea straw, you know, one of the woody-based mulches, and put it on top. Now, what's going to happen is, you know, it's not going to be like you turn on a switch and they go from being, you know, okay to being brilliant.
No.
Over the next month, as that organic fertilizer starts to become available, it's all about how the microbes in the soil make those nutrients available. As it starts to become available, those plants will be getting the nutrients they need at the right time. So, you know, the combination of the organic fertilizer with woody based mulch would be perfect. If you think the pots are when you water them, the water isn't soaking through the root ball yes. properly, you might add in, before you put your mulch down, a bit of organic wetting agent, right?
Yeah.
If you think that's the case, they're certainly too big to be picking up and dunking, you know, yes. with small pots you can dunk them in a sink or something, but they're too big for that. So you could add in something like a bit of organic wetting agent, but really just fertilizer and mulch and they'll be great.
Yes. Do I need to worry about collar rot with the woody base or?
We're talking less than a couple of centimetres, and okay. so, you know, these are established trees, so I wouldn't have it too yep. thick by the trunk, just scratch it out a bit.
Right, beautiful, excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Zita, for the call, 1300 222 891, to speak to Sophie, and you've been sent a flower from Beck and Victor from the Briar Farm for you, Sophie.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Absolutely
stunning. An
amazing
dahlia.
Wow, it looks so dramatic. Thank you for that. We're speaking to Regina next, and you, if you call in on 1300 222 891, if you are listening via digital devices or ABC Listen and you'd like to win an ABC Gardening magazine, send your full name and postal address via text to 0467 922 891. If you're listening via analogue, give us a call, 1300 222 891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Let's go to Inman Valley now. Regina, you have a Daphne and you'd like to get some advice. Good morning.
Hello,
thank you.
Regina. Great Hello. To hear from you.
Thank you. I've got a Daphne which looks very ratty. I call it ratty, but I think the word you just used recently would sound a little bit better. But anyway, can I prune it at the moment, please?
Okay. So because Daphnes are such precious plants, can I just ask a question first? Is the yes. foliage healthy and dark green? Is
no.
it just leggy or is it all splotchy and...
Yeah, the last word, I think you got it right.
Yeah,
it
okay.
It was in full sun and it's not doing very well. So I've moved it
oh.
now into morning sun.
Oh,
but
perfect.
But it is still very
okay.
yucky.
Okay, so I would be, first off, I would be getting a specific acid plant food for it too. How do you water it? Mains water or rainwater?
Rainwater only.
Oh, okay, beautiful. Okay, so it's just a bit sunburnt then. Can I say I would be loath to prune it back because they flower in winter. And my feeling is if we prune it now, you might well be cutting off flowers. So what I would do, if you can put up with it looking scrappy, I would leave it till winter. And then when it flowers, pick the flowers. So Daphne is one of those plants that we're often too scared to do anything with because they're so precious. But if you pick short stems of flowers and prune it at the same time, you only need about two or three little short stems in a vase and you will perfume a whole room. So I would hang off till winter. If it's looking a bit anemic and pale, that's because it's been in too much sun and it's probably a bit sunburnt. Now that you've moved it, it should start to green up. A little bit of seaweed-based plant tonic wouldn't hurt, and definitely some acid plant food.
Right, so morning sun will be okay?
Morning sun, afternoon shade is the perfect position for a Daphne.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, ladies. Love your program.
See you, Regina.
You have a great day.
Thank you. Same to you. That's lovely. Claire from Jamestown and Don from Woodville are our garden winners today. But don't worry, you'll get a chance to do that again next week as well. We've been talking about plants in the garden, and Carmen in Mount Barker sent a text through asking whether there are drought tolerant plants that are also not appealing to rabbits. Says living on acreage in Mount Barker, the rabbits are rampant and have eaten everything, including succulents, lavender and salvia. I fear that you're going to say exclusion is going to be the way to go, Sophie.
Absolutely. So I also have a rabbit issue out here. And so my baby local native plants that I put in have all got tree guards on them when they're little. And as I look to take those guards off, I'm looking at my rabbit management techniques because I do not want this beautiful little gum tree that I've, you know, laboured for a year to get to grow to be nipped off. So either you've got to have, you know, wire rings around young plants till they get big enough. It's interesting that rabbits don't usually like things that are quite aromatic. So, for example, rosemary, they don't tend to go for. I've got old wormwood out here, they don't tend to go for. So maybe I'd have a chat to State Flora. I mean, people are having rabbit issues all over the Adelaide Hills. So have a chat to them, and maybe there's some drought-tolerant plants that have got, you know, lots of essential oils in them that the bunnies don't like the taste of.
Okay, there you go. Some advice for you on that. Ben is in Prospect. Now, Ben, you've got a pomegranate. What's happening to it?
Yeah, good morning. I planted this tree about 5 years ago, and last summer it had flowers for the first time, and we had about three or four pomegranates off it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the spring of 2025, it was absolutely covered in flowers, and I was getting really excited, thinking I was going to have loads of fruit this summer, but not a single pomegranate fruit was produced. And I'm totally confused as to why.
Is this in full sun?
Yeah, pretty much, yep.
And it's got no, you know, like it's growing well?
Yeah, it's growing really well. It's healthy. The foliage and everything looks great. It's getting bigger. There's lots of bees in the garden. We have rosemary bush that attracts lots of bees, and I saw them on the pomegranate.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no fruit whatsoever.
Okay, because, you know, they can take a few years to flower, you know, 3 to 5 years to start fruiting. But, you know, from what you say, it should be ready to fruit now. I'm not really sure. And while I grow pomegranates, you know, I've got six different types out here in my new garden even, I'm not going to say I'm a pomegranate expert. I've just always put them in and then they fruited for me and, you know, then it was how you deal with the fruit. I'm going to suggest you contact the Rare Fruit Society and see what they think. Now, obviously, you know, this is a full-size pomegranate, not the dwarf one.
No, I didn't buy a dwarf. I'm pretty sure it's
okay. Because there's like an ornamental one that's only small, and that doesn't really fruit for you. And then there are some that are actually ones grown for their flowers. There's a beautiful creamy flowered one that's quite pretty as an ornamental tree, and then there's one that's orange flowers with a white frill on the edge. But if this is a proper fruiting pomegranate, I'm not sure why it's not performing, and I'd contact the Rare Fruit Society.
All right, we'll give that a go. Thank you.
All the best, Ben.
Thanks, Sophie.
Thank you very much, Ben, for calling in, and thanks to our many callers and texters this morning. Just coming back to rabbits, Sophie, Sally in Tanunda says, rabbits don't like capers. So that's another possibility.
Well, that's not exactly a local native plant. Does bring in the caper white butterfly, and great if you're going to do a pasta dish.
Now, Ben, Lizzie has sent a text saying that she also had the same problem with her pomegranate. She put some potash and banana juice and it's now fruiting beautifully.
Okay, so whether it's a nutritional problem, interesting.
Wow, thanks, Lizzie, for that. Colin says, I love Duranta repens, is that right? It's attracting blue-banded native bees.
Absolutely. So Duranta is, you'll find it in the garden centres sold under the names of Geisha Girl or something like that, has these sprays of purple flowers. Blue-banded bees love purple. So they love French lavender, they love Solanum wenlandii, which is the big shrubby Solanum with purple flowers. You know, they love Verbena benariensis and they do love Duranta.
Coming back to saltbush, there's a bit of a drama that Richard has had with it. Says, during the 2003 bushfires, I raked away combustible mulch under the eaves. Later, I planted saltbush as a fire-resistant mulch. It grew well under the citrus, but the Manchurian pear sucked the citrus dry, so I diverted the downpipe to water the garden. Saltbush died from too much water.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're so hardy, aren't they?
They are hardy. And, you know, that's where often having watering zones in our garden, you know, like where you put local native plants and once established they don't get watered, so then you've not got a problem with them dying from wet feet.
Yeah, that's right. Finally, on the topic of the wonderful recommendations from Alex Klobus from State Flora that we heard earlier on medium and large shrubs for you to plant in your garden, said that segment was absolutely awesome. So thanks, Caroline. Appreciate you giving us that feedback. I don't want to labour the point, but so many texts still coming in. It's not a gardening newsletter that I am talking about. It is the ABC Radio Adelaide newsletter. You need to go to our website, abc.net.au/Adelaide. You need to scroll right to the bottom and put in your email address and you'll get the ABC Radio Adelaide newsletter with mostly radio news in it every fortnight. But what we are doing is printing off both Ben Freeman's list of recommended trees from last Saturday's Talk Back Gardening and Alex Klobus's recommended shrubs, because they are, you know, detailed, aren't they? The guys have gone to a lot of trouble and a lot of thought in creating those lists, so you can access them that way.
Absolutely. But you can also listen back with a pen and paper and a cup of tea. You know, you'll get more information from listening too, because you'll get you'll think that's perfect for what I want.
Exactly. So listen back. It will be podcast from Monday, so you can listen back, or you can listen back this afternoon when it is available online. Just go to abc.net.au/Adelaide, look for weekends, look for latest program, and you can listen back as well. So the week ahead, Sophie, Chili Fest tomorrow.
I'm filming later in the week, and hopefully in there I'm going to get a bit of gardening done because I was away last week.
Well, my fingers and toes are crossed for you, everybody else in the mid-north and the north that is hoping for some rain. I hope it's not a deluge. I hope it's just the right amount for everybody, and hopefully we'll get some here on the plains as well.
Absolutely. Well, happy gardening to all our listeners and have a great week, Deb.